The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning, a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topic
and asks what you think.
So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. It is our last hour together of the day. It is our last hour together of the week. It is our last hour together for a week. Little vacation week next week, and you will, and boy, the story is now the stuff of legend. You know when vacation week was going to be. That would be this week, the one just gone by. And as soon as the Trump summit was announced on June 12th, let's change that up. Let's make it the week after. And then the summit sort of went away there for about 10 minutes. And I thought, well, what's done is done. Let's just leave it where it is. It's not like they're going to reschedule it for the week after. Well, they rescheduled it, all right, for the same day the summit happened. And oh, what a week it's been. I have been thrilled to have been here this past week. Now, don't let anything crazy happen next week. If it does, no matter what it might be, you'll be in great hands. Wonderful. The sage of East Texas, Paul Gleiser, who has the UTEL Me Texas blog, UTellMeTexas.com, and an owner and broadcaster out there at KTBB Radio in Tyler. He's filled in many times, and we just love when he does. Paul will be with you next week, and you will be in excellent, excellent hands. All righty, let's head back down to San Antonio. We started off this morning with Missy Shorey, who is the Dallas County GOP chairwoman, and as such, and she's a friend, and Wade Emmert is a friend, Tim O'Hare is a friend, who's just coming out of his honorable service as Tarrant County GOP chair. And when you are a Republican chair, you can be bold in your politics in terms of how Republicans are better than Democrats and conservatism's better than liberalism. But if you're asked a question like, which person do you want to win the state GOP chair, or what person do you want to win the primary in some race or another, you can never answer that, because it's your job, in fact, not to take sides. Without such hindrances, Tom Giovanetti joins us from the IPI Institute for Policy Innovation, IPI.org. It's a pleasure when Tom joins us from his office, from his house. But if he's down in San Antonio, it's fantastic. Hi, Tom. Welcome.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I am great. So I talked to Missy, and it gave me a chance to learn a little bit about this. Let me give the setup, and then you tell me whom you prefer and why. You have the gentleman who I have spoken with a couple of times, James Dickey, on the occasion of his ascendancy to state party chairmanship. I found nothing particularly lacking about him. He seems to be an able chair. He is being challenged by a woman named Cindy Ash, who I think is from up here in our neck of the woods, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so anyway, and what she's been doing, her angle has been, I support Trump more than Dickey does, and while I was on board with Trump from the beginning, Mr. Dickey was one of those folks speaking that bizarre cultish language, free the delegates. He was a cruise guy, as was I, but did not have the millisecond journey that I had to instantly become a Trump supporter, because he was the only human being who could be Hillary. Now, here's my take on this. If Mr. Dickey is better now, if he has seen the results and freed himself from his prior shackles, then I'm prepared to be great with him. So, A, tell me your take, and B, has he done so?
Sure. Well, I'm a Dickey supporter, and I want to hurry to clarify, and that's me personally.
Oh, sure,
that
sure,
has
sure.
Nothing to do with IPI.
Understand.
Because the organization doesn't do politics. You know, the primary job of a party chairman is to raise money for the party.
Mm-hmm.
It's to make sure that primary elections are run properly. And that sort of a thing. So the primary job of a party chairman is sort of to keep the trains running on time and to make sure things are adequately funded. So I think that any chairman who succeeds at that has been a successful chairman. Now, if you go above and beyond that and you say, was he also a successful advocate during the legislative session for conservative values? did he actually work himself to try to make sure that members of the legislature were pushing the right agenda and that sort of thing? Then that's sort of an added plus. And Dickey has done that. I was at his reception last night, and I was actually struck by the sort of the broadness of the turnout at his reception. There were Freedom Caucus folks there. There were sort of mainline old-time Republican operatives there. And the room was absolutely packed to overflowing. It's widely expected that he's going to win this morning, and that vote is this morning. In fact, by the time we're off the phone, that could be just about concluded. I think he's done a really good job, and I have nothing against his challenger, but I think you have to make a compelling case for overthrowing a successful party chairman.
You got to beat the champ. There's got to be a reason, a palpable justification for firing the guy. And if that
I don't think he wasn't Trumpy enough during the primaries is even relevant in this case. And of course, you know me, I wasn't Trumpy either during the primary.
Well, so but you get it.
It's obvious that I'm not going to have a problem.
No,
with that.
Exactly. You intellectually have seen what's going on, and now you stand, before me and here on the show with a long list of things that you have loved about the Trump presidency and a list of things that you don't love, like the trade policies. You're intellectually honest. You have never been blinded by some weird narcissistic stylistic thing about Trump that kept you from seeing the truth of conservative change. And if that's true of Mr. Dickey as well, then great. You have a very good point that it seems like you're telling me that it may not really matter so very much what the party chairman's personal political tastes are, as long as he's serving broadly the interests of the Republican Party of Texas. I'm prepared to hear that. But just on principle, I'd like my party chair not to be a never Trump cultist.
Oh, well, that's I agree with you. And he's far from that. No, I'll tell you the sort of thing that would be a deal breaker for me. If the party were in financial trouble, and we've seen this at the county level several places where, a chairman was overthrown, the new guy came in, and 3 months later, all of a sudden, the party was in financial trouble. So you can't have that. So if the state party were in financial trouble, that would be a deal breaker for me. If the chairman had been working during the last legislative session behind the scenes to try to undermine the Freedom Caucus or something like that, that would be a deal breaker for me. And none of those things have happened. So I've really been impressed with the job he's done. And I think we're in good shape, and I think we'll continue to be in good shape if he is reelected.
Can I just ask, to the extent that we know, what is Mr. Dickey's view? And I know he's a party chair, and so even at the state level, you can't really get real sharp-elbowed in terms of your preferences. But deep down, what is the James Dickey view of Joe Strauss?
No, he's been a Strauss critic. I mean, he's publicly been a Strauss critic. Now, of course, he's got to get along with everybody, so he hasn't been as much of a Strauss critic as I have been or the Freedom Caucus has been. But, there was pressure on him from Strauss and people like that to alienate himself from the Freedom Caucus, and he refused to do it. And that's sort of what I was meaning earlier.
Gotcha.
That he wasn't trying to undermine the Freedom Caucus. He wasn't making snide comments about how they're being unhelpful or counterproductive, that kind of thing. The clue language this session, and I think going forward, is this idea. The Strauss people have been talking about reasonable Republicans, and they've been talking about practical Republicans, and that's some of the key words that they use to try to distinguish themselves from the Freedom Caucus and to try to marginalize them. And you don't hear Dickey getting involved in that kind of language, and I think that's important.
Good. So what kind of so you've had day one, here's day two. What are the big buzz talking points? What's the agenda? What do you want to have happen? And what's been your travelogue down there?
Yeah, well, a lot of the work of the convention was done earlier this week. I mean, people have been down here all week working on the platform and things like that. And the main things that happen at a convention functionally are the platform and the election of the chairman. So we've already talked about the election of the chairman. The platform committee has been working for days. I think that's really important. Some people don't, but I think having a written consensus statement that says what the party believes in, I think is important, because it gives you something that you can hold politicians' feet to the fire, that they're out of context with the platform. And of course, our platform here in Texas tends to be very, very conservative. And the one area of controversy this week has been on school choice. And what has actually happened on the school choice element of the platform is something very odd. The very, very, very hardliners on school choice got control of that part of the platform. And what I mean by very hardliners is there's an element of the school choice community that does not believe in any government funding whatsoever. They believe if there's any government funding, that actually contaminates your freedom to educate your children the way you want to. And what that does is that leads them in a direction to oppose tax credits and to oppose vouchers and things like that.
Well, I mean, pause, because I've met folks along this spectrum. Do you mean, I mean, a sufficient purity on this issue that they actually oppose the concept of taxpayer-funded public schools?
Well, they oppose charter schools, believe it or not.
Well, but charter schools are part of it. But, I mean, they actually – and listen, this is not an – it's radical, but it's not unprincipled. The founding fathers never envisioned a government-funded public school system. So is that what you mean when you talk about – is that their actual view?
Well, this all falls under the topic of school choice.
Right.
They're not really even talking about public schools. What they're talking about is the idea – for instance – the major school choice proposal that has succeeded in several other states and that I would like to see something like this happen in Texas is this idea of education savings accounts.
Right.
And the idea is that the amount of dollars that goes to educating a student from the state would actually go to the student and to the family in the form of a, you know, certificate or a debit card or something like that. And then they could then spend that money on homeschooling supplies, private school tuition, or whatever.
Yep.
So the hard line school choice people are opposed to that because of this idea that they don't want any government money being involved in school choice. And so what they did is they succeeded in getting a plank on the platform that opposes government funding for school choice. So this is actually an example where it's sort of not the moderates that are, in my view, being unhelpful. It's actually the hardliners that are being unhelpful. But
right, because if you really do favor school choice, anything that offers incentives that move towards school choice seem like a good idea.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, if there are 10,000 people in Texas who are actively working in some fashion to try to promote school choice, you know, out of that 10,000, the 100 that don't believe in any government funding are the ones who actually got control of the platform element. Right. And so that's probably going to be a floor fight later today. I think the majority of delegates probably oppose that element in the platform. They just think it ought to be broader. They think that if we can get some sort of a voucher or tax credit or education savings account proposal in Texas, that there's no reason why the Republican Party of Texas should be opposed to that.
If Tom Giovanetti's on the phone from IPI, he and his buddy Matthews, great providers of wisdom there at IPI.org, and if he's on the phone with us from San Antonio for the convention, seems like we ought to plug the next IPI event because they are always awesome. And coming up on Thursday of week after next, Thursday, June 28th, at the Belo Mansion, IPI.org, click events, and you can attend a luncheon with one of my favorite economics guys, one of my favorite financial people, and that is Stephen Moore, with a big history at Cato, big history at Heritage, on the Trump financial team, and the theme is Trumponomics, how and why it's working. Steve is great.
Steve is fabulous. He's a longtime friend. One of the very first things I did when I went to work at IPI was edit and publish a book by Steve called Government America's Number One Growth Industry. That was like 24 years ago.
Tremendous.
We thought it was bad then.
Yeah, well, if you only knew.
Yeah, but Steve is a fabulous guy. He is, you know, right down the line on principle of supply side, or he believes in economic growth. He's a Reaganite. And he and Larry Kudlow were the two closest economic advisors to Trump during the campaign. Larry and Steve both had a heavy hand in designing Trump's tax cut proposal. So, you know, Steve, like me, is sort of still tingly over the
highs have been so high. But let me ask this, because I sure know your view. How does Steve feel about the tariffs and the trade war stuff?
Well, you know, Steve, like me, understands that tariffs are a bad idea.
Yeah.
But one of the deals you have to make if you're going to have influence with Trump is you have to be willing to sort of give him the benefit of the doubt that long term he believes in free trade.
Yeah.
He just thinks that this we need to apply more pressure. I was very cheered. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this. The tariff stuff drives me up straight up the wall with Trump.
Yep.
But he said something really interesting after the G7 meeting. He actually threw out the idea that we ought to have a trading zone among the G7 with zero tariffs. And, you know, for him to say something like that really makes me sort of say, okay, all right.
What everybody has to do with Trump is just take a look at the big picture, the long game, and see where we might ultimately go rather than obsessing about every morning's headline. Because what does that provide? The zero tariff thing is the definition of a level playing field. And that's what he's always said he wanted. So.
And you know, for someone like me, that is the ultimate goal. That among, you know, whether it's a free trade agreement or whether it's through the WTO or whatever, that we get our tariffs down to zero. And the fact that Trump would just sort of spontaneously volunteer that tells me that that's not a foreign concept to him.
No,
actually get it.
All right, Stephen Moore, just Trumponomics, how and why it's working. It's the next IPI event, a great lunch at the Belo Mansion, couple of Thursdays from now, Thursday, June 28th. Just click events at IPI.org. Thank you, Tom. Safe travels. Happy Father's Day. Much appreciate you.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet. God bless. All righty, 9:24. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Waylon does a cover of the Allman's Midnight Rider. Waylon's birthday. Oh, who's that birthday shared with? With more, here's Rhonda with a family update and a noble cause update and other cool things. What you got?
Well, we're just over here living La Vida Loca, celebrating a happy birthday shout out to my sister, Brandy Jo.
Your recently discovered sister.
Yes.
This is so cool. Everybody knows the whole life story here in the adoption thing, and that means there's a whole family nestled somewhere that you got to go find. And you did. And not only did you discover her, and not only is it her birthday, but you have dragged her to town.
Absolutely.
Because she was in...
She was in Arkansas,
right.
In Little Rock, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's here.
We fixed
here.
That.
We fixed that.
She's a Texan now.
She's a Texan, and not only is she a Texan, but she's joined me in my pro-life efforts by managing the store, Save More Resale Store, that benefits our Birth Choice Crisis Pregnancy Center.
And tell everybody where that is and hours of operation, and do you take donations, and what do you do?
Yes. The address is 11255 Garland Road, and that is in Dallas at Jupiter and Garland Road intersection. There's a pink awning to look for, so pop in there and say hi to Brandy, meet her, and wish her a happy birthday. We're also celebrating our one-year anniversary, so there's a huge sale going on tomorrow, 50% off everything. So we're excited about that, and it's just a great opportunity for our listeners to support me, because they are always great about, you know, reaching out about my pro-life efforts. And so I'm just asking our listeners to come support, you know, Birth Choice by shopping at Save More, and they can donate, they can shop, they can save, they can volunteer.
What kind of donation stuff are you looking for? What do you want? What do you not want? Because I always like to donate. I'm looking to give any stuff of mine that I can donate. I
need all of your shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
I need the clothes off your back.
I need them now.
It's funny because men's clothing goes hot. We're right next door to the Home Depot. And so a lot of the workers come in and they're men, obviously, and they come in. And so the men's clothing flies off the shelves. So you and Gordon and Shane could really help us out and donate your men's clothing. Home Goods is a big seller there. Obviously, the kids' clothes. I mean, it's just everything. And you never know. I mean, I think I showed you that one picture of the albums. I mean, you just had Tom on the show. Like, we found these amazing old albums that I was like, oh my goodness, this is just, it's a treasure. You never know what's going to be donated in that store. It's amazing.
Right. For more info then, because first of all, happy birthday again to Brandy Jo.
Yes.
And give everybody where to go as they absorb
all
this stuff.
Yes, please go like our Facebook page at Save More Resale Store, and you can join us in Living La Vida Loca at the Save More Resale Store, and we are just excited about, 50% off everything tomorrow, so come
see us.
Can't
beat that. Very, very cool. That's
absolutely.
Ron Kay with Family News, Pro-Life News, and a lot of news to pile into our final half hour before we bust out for the Father's Day weekend. Casey, what's Casey's Father's Day plan?
To do nothing.
Yes, finally the right answer. Finally, what do you want? Soap on a rope? What do you want?
No, I want to. Bless his heart.
Let me have
like,
some time.
He just doesn't want. He just wants to do absolutely nothing.
That's so cool.
So yes, we are going to be spoiling him this weekend, as he does us on a daily.
Ever.
364.
Awesome.
He spoils us, and then on Saturday and Sunday, we're going to be spoiling him.
And all the dads in the radio family, from Gordon and Shane. Shane traveled across an ocean to hang out with his daughter, so okay, we've been scoreboarded by that, and got a thing or two to say about the dads in my life and the Father's Day story, I gotta tell you, and some calls to take and some news to cover before we bust on out of here and give it over to Mike Gallagher. 9:33, Mark Davis, here is Gordon Griffin.
Well, I walked the road of life among the strong, among the weak. And I asked them for the shortcut to the answers that I seek. But no one seems to understand what is and what will be. Or the questions of my childhood.
The Kansas Dorks will recognize from Left Overture, Questions of My Childhood. 866-660-5759.
Can you get me through these changes? Well, it's all about my life, for one thing for sure.
All righty, let us, here was the interesting moment on the morning TV box this morning. Have you heard that, that President Trump photobombed Fox and Friends? They had everybody out with a big press gaggle. And on a given morning, every network's White House correspondents or broadcast teams of some derivation are out there on the front lawn of the White House. And usually they're just sort of, you know, talking to the audience or talking to each other, or the occasional White House person will come out and make an appearance. And this morning, with all, again, every TV news crew out there, President Trump pops out, starts working the crowd. And so what you will hear here is him working the crowd and attracting, obviously, an enormous buzz of attention. And then he walks over to where Steve Doocy is standing and does a little Q&A, surprise, surprise, with Fox and Friends.
Oh, this is great. You've got some excitement out on your lawn today. Hello, Mr. President.
A little excitement.
What brings you here?
Are we on already?
We're on. We're live.
Oh, wow. That's good.
We're on every channel.
Yeah. All the other camera crews are gathered around filming the spectacle.
No kidding.
That was good. That was good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was here for the baseball game. How about Steve Scalise last night?
I think he's great. How about the play? The first play of the game.
Unbelievable.
He's a great guy. Courageous.
Right.
You like you.
Yeah. Huh? Sure. Having you stop by live, I got some questions for
you. I was mugged by the media.
They've got questions for you. I'm hoping I can ask a lot of the questions they've
got. Well, they're very, very nice people.
You know, the IG report came out yesterday. The FBI looks bad.
Very bad.
Your FBI.
It's Comey. I mean, they were talking about Comey, not my FBI. It was Comey. The people in the FBI are incredible. I would bet if you took a poll in the FBI, I would win that poll by more than anybody's ever won a poll. But the top people.
That's so awesome. Instantly, the FBI is defined not by the percentage of people who are honorable and hardworking, but by how many of them like him. He's probably quite right. But here's the punctuation I want to offer, is so many people have so stupidly said that as the president has properly criticized the corruption in the FBI and the corruption and skullduggery in the Department of Justice, that is a very surgical and precise criticism. It's not meant to be a broad brush against everybody in the Department of Justice. It's not meant to be an enormous back of the hand delivered to every agent and staff member at the FBI. Not at all. Just the bad ones. And there is a den of snakes at the FBI. And the Inspector General's report does us the great favor of revealing that so that everybody who's been denying it can do us the favor of shutting up. The IG report is all the proof you need to know that the uppermost echelons of law enforcement have been corrupted, have been tainted, their reputations deservedly stained by the bad actions of a few. But look at who the few are, and look at the levels at which they toil, and look at what they were trying to do. They were trying to interrupt the will of the people in the ascendancy, election, and governance of President Trump. And they deserve to be hammered for that. Now, while doing so at the same time, is it a good idea to make sure that everybody knows that you know, if you're president, or that I know as a radio guy, or that you know, whatever you do for a living, that the vast majority of the people at the FBI are total, straight up, wonderful practitioners of their craft, and that the problem is limited to a few. But that doesn't mean that it's a small problem. Because when one of them is the director, as it was before he was properly fired, and when some of the Department of Justice problem involves the assistant attorney general like Rod Rosenstein, then that is a problem that is small in terms of the number of people involved, but vast in terms of the power they wield.
were horrible. You look at what happened. They were plotting against my election. Probably has never happened like that in terms of intelligence, in terms of anything else. Right. But they were actually plotting against my election.
The headline right now
is... But I'm actually proud because I beat Clinton dynasty.
Right.
I beat Bush dynasty. And now, I guess, hopefully I'm in the process of beating very dishonest intelligence, because what they did was incredible and a real insult to millions of people that voted in that election on both sides.
The headline right now from the Wall Street Journal, DOJ Clinton report blasts Comey and agents but finds no bias in conclusion.
Well, the end result was wrong. I mean, there was total bias. I mean, when you look at Peter Strzok and what he said about me, when you look at Comey, all his moves. So I guess, you know, it's interesting. It was a pretty good report. And then I say that the IG blew it at the very end with that statement, because when you read the report, it was almost like Comey. He goes point after point about how guilty Hillary is. Mm-hmm. And then he said, but we're not going to do anything about it. The report, the IG report, was a horror show. I thought that one sentence of conclusion was ridiculous.
What about apparently the lovebirds talking about you? We will stop it.
Yeah, they said they will stop me. Well, in the meantime, the economy hit an all-time high this morning. Never been better. Jobless rate, the lowest, the best in 44 years, just came out. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some incredible things. We're just announcing very big tariffs today on China, because China has been, you know, look, he's my friend, President Xi. He's a great man. He's a wonderful guy, but... at some point, we have to straighten it out. We lost $500 billion in trade deficits last year. We can't do that.
Is the new tariff something like 25% on 50
Well, it's being announced right now as
okay.
I speak.
You can announce
it. So maybe you have the first announcement.
So the whole tariffs battle is going to be an interesting thing moving forward. So let me, as we're close to done here for the week and for the day, and as I hand it over to the great Paul Gleiser to fill in next week, a word or two or three about three fathers, three dads, as we head into Father's Day. First of all the dads, and if you are a dad, God bless you. And if your dad is still around here on the planet, make sure you reach out. I don't want to hear about family estrangement. Listen, if he chased you around the kitchen with a knife, that's one thing. But by and large, why don't you be the person to heal those rifts? You only have one dad, and so you go make it right. All right, so why don't you do that this Father's Day if you have the opportunity to do so. The first dad I want to talk to you about is my dad, Stanley Green Davis, born November 10th, 1931 in Seaboard, North Carolina. And 20 years Air Force, and then did some things in private industry. But no matter what he was doing, no matter where he went to work in the morning, I always knew I was loved by my dad. And we talk a lot about fatherhood and absent fathers and bad parenting. And from my dad and my mom, and I say this every Mother's Day, the great blessing of knowing every day that I was loved by a mom and dad who raised me right. I didn't carry that ball well for a lot of my young adulthood and a lot of my older adulthood. But as both my mom and dad passed in 1998, and that means the 20th anniversary is coming up for my dad in July. And it's something I think about all the time. And I hope that things I'm doing, things I'm saying, make him proud. And when dad did pass, not long after that, I met Lisa and married her, the great blessing of my life. And her dad, Jimmy Lee, filled that empty place in my heart and here on earth as my father-in-law, but felt just like my dad as he is hers and the other and his other kids. His welcoming of me, his embrace of me, he passed away a couple of Novembers ago, but I think of him every single day, as obviously Lisa does. And so to Jimmy Lee, my other dad, an enormous hello in heaven. And thanks for all you did for me. The third dad that I want to talk to you about is me. Because when I take a look at Regina and at Ethan, he is 15 and she is 26. They're a half a generation apart. But to watch them together and to have played a part in the kind of young woman that Regina is and the kind of young man that Ethan is becoming, and to partner with Lisa it's kind of funny. I love my son and my daughter equally, but when you are a father and it is a son, you are a man trying to do your best to raise a man. And that is the task at hand. And it is a joy to watch him and see him and watch him grow, as it's a joy to see my wonderful daughter, Regina, and the kind of woman that she has become. And it's so the talk show gig is great. You know, every label I put on myself is a conservative, as a Republican. The most important thing is Christ follower. But one of the most important job titles I have is dad. The husband and father thing is something that I am enormously, enormously blessed by. So a happy Father's Day to all the dads, and to Reg and to Ethan. I love you guys. And Lisa, I love you too. And to be your husband and to funnel those fathering tasks through that blessed relationship means the world to me. So let's get out of here and let Father's Day happen next.
I slipped and fell into the Wisconsin.
On Waylon's birthday, one of my favorite things Waylon ever did,
they buried me in that
was that Highwayman album that he did with Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson.
I'm still around.
Title track from that, Waylon, the Highwayman. As we take the highway into vacation week, Paul Gleiser will be with you. Check him out at youtellmetexas.com. Some of his blogging and writing. Just a great guy. Always love when Paul fills in. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland at producer Rhonda K. Shane Bell, the Shane Bell Band. Learn more, shanebellband.com. Gigs, musical info. And news ace Gordon Griffin. I'm Mark Davis. God bless our country. God bless our troops. God bless our families. God bless the dads on this Father's Day. Have a great week. I'll be on Twitter. I'll be doing some things. Please, I can't unplug that much. And I'll see you all a week for Monday. Radio on 660 AM, The Answer. Have a great day.
But I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.